Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former 3-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Monday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. January 27th, 2025. We're in our DC studios. And for the first time on a Monday in many, many, many weeks, no Hall & Oates to start our show. No Victory Monday. The clock has struck midnight on a Cinderella run for the Commanders. They give up 55 yesterday. I got to tell you, though, Danny, it's not a misery Monday for me. I can compartmentalize and both be upset and frustrated by how they played in the NFC Championship game, giving up more points than any team ever has in that round, but also feel really, really good about what was an unlikely and an incredible and an unforeseen journey. Every rose has its thorn, my friend. Yesterday was tough.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I will. I'll be able to do it. I'll be able to look back and talk about how remarkable this all was and how much fun it was and the joy that 28 other teams were sitting there watching my team play football just like I was. Not now. It's still too raw. It's still too annoying. It's because it's them. If this was the Vikings or the Rams or the Cardinals or any non-offensive team, I'd go, oh, bummer. Let's talk about all the joy. It's those that puke green. It's the stupid song. It's that team. This particular Eagles team is very hateable. They don't make my top 12 list of all times Eagles teams that I hate. Most of those include John Runyon. But God, that group is so annoying. They're excellent. They're great. They deserve to win the game. They were better. You know, we'll talk about individual calls and things that didn't go Washington's way. Philly was going to win the game. They are the better team, up and down, deserve to win it, etc. But yeah, it still hurts a little bit too much to kind of do the. Hey, big picture, let's take the autopsy of the year. I'll be able to, I promise, because it's the gig, but I'm upset, dude.
Yeah, I don't know that today has to be the day to do that, right. Honestly. I think it's an important home base, though, to be able, and today is a great day to do it as much as any, to say, man, just getting there was an accomplishment. It's wild that the season ended in the NFC Championship game. This is a massive win of a campaign. But you're right, it doesn't have to be today, really, that we talk about the good or the healthy of the organization. I'm going to because I'm further along, it sounds like, in the healing process than you are. I mean, I got to be honest. It was such a house money journey.
It totally was.
That had they have lost in Tampa Bay, I would have been able to do it the next morning. Had they have lost in Detroit, which I was expecting, I would have been able to do it the next morning. And I'm certainly able to do that after yesterday in Philadelphia. I was actually talking to someone about this today. I want to get your thoughts. As embarrassing as losing by 32 points is, and giving up 55, a 50 burger in the conference championship game. Mm. Ugly, brutal, you get outclassed, whatever. I think I would rather lose like they did yesterday, where, as I said, the clock struck midnight, all of the flaws that hadn't really been fully exposed yet got exposed in one game, and you went up against a team that's better than you that played its best playoff game while you played your worst playoff game. And you just lost in a game where you pretty much knew at the end of the third quarter, Washington was going to lose. And by the early fourth quarter, the question was, can they just get back into this game to make it interesting at all? I think I'd rather do that than had they have played Philly really tight and lost like, say, Buffalo did in Kansas City at Arrowhead. If yesterday was going to come down to the wire and they were going to lose at the horn, or they could give up 55 and we could be sitting here saying, they weren't ready for that yet. That's not really the game that they probably should have been playing in based on where they're at in their program. I think I would take what happened yesterday, honestly, than the excruciating, oh my God, I was this close to the Super Bowl. Because I'm able to wake up today and go, what a crazy run.
Yep.
That was fun. And they're just not that close to a Super Bowl team. Truly. I mean, and figuratively and literally. You saw it yesterday. They got too many fatal flaws. They got a chance to fix and cure them this offseason. But I think I'd rather it go how yesterday did than having really lost a heartbreaker at the horn.
I think that's probably right. There's no good way to lose. Just to be very clear, especially to a rival, especially to a team that I can't stand and a fan base that I can't stand. But, you know, there's a quote. I'm trying to remember what it's from. What's better, a bullet to the brain or a bullet where you bleed out? I don't know. I guess that was more bullet to the brain.
That got real there for a second. Where
you go, okay, this one's over. They're not coming back. They got no chance. Versus that, like, victory's right there and it's super close and it gets ripped away from you. I don't know. Yeah, no good way to do it, but I think this is probably the preferable way, if there is such a thing.
This is how it happens when the Cinderella story does not end with a championship, right? When the magical carpet ride ends abruptly. Like, all of the things that we've talked about going into every game against Tampa that could rear their head and end their season. Against Detroit, the reasons why they weren't going to couldn't beat the Lions. They never really ended up costing them. And then you go up against Philly, and it all rears its head at once. There's going to be a lot of columns written. Think pieces will be bountiful on why yesterday happened. To me, this is so simple. And it's really two-pronged. You fumbled three times, and you turned it over four times. The single biggest reason why Washington won two playoff games, other than Jaden Daniels, but I could probably argue even more important to them winning the two playoff games than anything that Daniels did individually, was their plus six turnover margin. The fact that they were plus one with a takeaway and no giveaways in Tampa, and the fact that they were plus five takeaways, zero giveaways in Detroit. Then yesterday happened, Danny, and it was the opposite.
Yep.
Dyami Brown fighting for extra yards, fumble. Jeremy McNichols on a kick return at the end of the half, right after you gave up a touchdown.
That was brutal.
Fumbles. Daniels and McLaurin hook up on the slant. You get within two. The next time Jaden Daniels touches the football, you're down 15 points.
27-12, just like that.
And you're chasing, and it's halftime, and it's a nightmare. And then in the second half, when they're showing some signs of life, low throw, Eckler standing up off the ground, gets the ball punched out. We'll talk to him tomorrow. He loses a fumble. The fourth turnover was a Jaden Daniels interception. Nice play by Quinion Mitchell. But I got to be honest, that's just like, take a shot down the field.
Yeah, you're forcing something, trying to make a play.
I don't really fault Daniels that much for that. But four turnovers. That's why you lost. And then on the other side of the ball defensively, you didn't have any answers. They couldn't stop Barkley. First play of the game, 60-yard touchdown. They couldn't cover A.J. Brown. Marshawn Lattimore, completely ineffective. They couldn't cover Devontae Smith. They couldn't cover Dallas Goedert. And Jalen Hurts, for the most part, had time to throw and looked healthy and played a really good, clean game. But defensively, what did they take away? It was the best game the Eagles have played all year. They had a season high in almost everything and scored 55 points.
So outside of the 60-yarder from Barkley, he was around 14 for 50-something, which isn't shutting him down, but it's not unbelievable.
He was also hurt after that.
And he was clearly banged up.
He was getting treatment for his calf. They stopped using him until his backup got hurt, and then he had to come back in the game.
Yeah, and so, you know, the point was, well, they said, okay, fine, we're going to try to commit to the run. And you know, they slowed Gainwell down, and the running game wasn't as effective. Constant third and sevens, third and eights, third and tens, converted as if they were 7-on-7 drills. I mean, that's where the defense is. They can barely sometimes, at times, maybe sort of slow something down. And then the other things available. Against a good offense. Against Carolina, when they're reeling, you can be aggressive and shove it on people. Against Cleveland, when they can't complete a forward pass, you can look really good. So the quality of the defense overall this year was buoyed by some of those games where they got fat. But that group needs a lot of work, quite frankly. And the pass defense, a number of times, guys were running alone. comfortable, uncovered, relaxed catch. What do you want to do? Check your watch, order a sandwich, make a quick cell phone call at Joe Horn, and then get upfield.
The Eagles, good Joe Horn reference, by the way, ran the same concept for like the play action deep outs to the sideline four or five times. Mm-hmm. And on every single one of them, Devontae Smith or A.J. Brown was wide open. Like, I'm trying to think, was there a contested catch made down the field by an Eagles receiver? On the fourth and five, when Brown ran past Lattimore in man coverage when he was in bump at the line of scrimmage, I look, there were PBUs. Lattimore had a couple of pass breakups, had one on a slant, I think the first throw of the game. Even Sanders still had a couple of pass breakups. But I don't remember anything down the field where an Eagle was well covered on a Hurts throw that was incomplete. They couldn't hang. And honestly, they didn't even really have to step on the gas pedal late. Like, Will Shipley was in the game, whoever that is, and he was just running through holes that you could have driven a truck through. It was a tough watch toward the end. A terrible way for a memorable, wonderful season to end.
Yeah, I mean, your last taste is that
32-point loss in the division. Like, just when you hear that, that's tough, man.
I mean, so the formula for them, they deserve blame. Philly deserves credit for turning the football over. The forced fumbles are clearly a thing that they do.
Which Quinn said, by the way, after the game, I was in his presser at the link. He's like, I want to make it clear. We didn't just lose the football. Like, they punched the ball out. They made plays. They ripped the ball out from Diami. I think it was Bond with a punch.
Yep.
The punch on Eckler was perfect.
Great play. I mean, they clearly schooled on it.
McNichols is the closest one to like a fluky, what the hell's the matter
with
you?
Yeah, that was just a vomit, I thought.
Kind of fumble. But for the most part, the Eagles, like the Quinyon Mitchell pick was excellent play.
So even with the turnovers, and again, Washington deserves the blame, Philly deserves the credit, et cetera. It's an 11-point game in the third quarter. Now, I'm not telling you that's right where you want to be. I'm not telling you, like, you got them, right? You're there. They're in your sights. But it was still kind of, it wasn't over yet.
Was that after? That was after two of the fumbles, right?
Yeah,
that was before the Eckler fumble and the Jaden pick.
And so you're in the game there, right? After you score, you stopped them. You're getting the ball back at 34-23 with some momentum, having been outplayed.
Yep, you're moving the ball.
You've got a chance right there. And now we're going to remember this as a blowout, and it was. Again, Philly was going to win; they were the better team. But the point was, even with the bad, you still had this charmed life that they were living, where they're not as talented, they're not as quick, they're not as strong, they're not as fast, they can't stop Philly, they can't contend with all the different things, they probably can't really run the ball consistently, the offensive line isn't quite good enough to hold up, and yet, here they are. If you drive and score right there, who the hell knows what's going to happen? And again, Philly deserves to win, they're the better team. But it's even still, within the blowout, that sort of ride we were on was continuing. Right? I mean, you still sort of felt like this thing is not over just yet. Let's see what happens after a score. Then that's that's when the bad happens. That's when Eckler fumbles. And that, to me, the instant that happened, and even though a Washington player came out with the football, I actually thought it was the right call, by the way. It's something that I don't think the NFL does consistently. Clearly, within the frame of play, the Philly player is on the ball and has it. Then he's touched or whatever, and Biotis rips it away from him. To his credit, he's still hustling. But a lot of times when the pileup happens, they go, whoever comes out with it has it. The Philly player had it. So I think it's the right call. It just sucks that it happened. As soon as that went down, that was the game. Like, that to me was the nail in the coffin. If you go down score right there and they were moving the ball that drive, then it's a different story. It wasn't right there. And that to me was when it ended.
Yeah, Philly scored again back end after that takeaway to take a 41-23 lead with 12 to play. Now it's an 18-point game, a three-possession game. And to your point, it's over. They were the only team to score after that. They would add a couple of more touchdowns in the fourth quarter. The four turnovers, by the way, led to 28 points in a game that you lost by 32.
Yep.
So there is theoretically the difference. Now, I will say, it's not like Philly took over at the 3-yard line every single time. Three of those 28 points, those touchdown drives, so 21 total points, three sevens there, were a little shy of midfield or around midfield plus and minus territory. Average takeover around the 50. Meaning you could have held them to field goals. That, if that's 9 points instead of 21 on those three drives after those fumbles, that's a completely different ballgame in and of itself. But they did not hold them to a field goal one single time. So you can't just blame the offense
right
for the turnovers. where is my defense in a complimentary way bailing me out once or twice? I'm playing the number one defense in the NFL, statistically. I'm going to turn the ball over, possibly. I need you to hold the Eagles to a field goal every now and then. And by the way, the Eagles in the red zone, care to guess what they were?
100%, whatever. How many times they were there? Five, six?
Seven for seven.
Seven, yeah.
I've never even seen that before. Seven rushing touchdowns, by the way.
And anytime you forced a, you thought you stopped them on third down, it was the personal foul with a hit on the sideline. It was, pass interference, which I thought, the pass interference certainly was the right call. I think they're both hand fighting a little bit, Lattimore and Devontae Smith. But if you're right there, cover instead of grab. But he grabbed and pass interference in the end zone.
I thought that PI was the most obvious PI ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even as bad as the PI one play before that when he completely interfered with Dallas Goedert and got away with it.
Yeah.
Lattimore was a massive dud in these playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't play well. I don't know if it's the hamstring or his health or if he's not up to speed in the defense or if it's all of it. There's 2 years left on the contract. I'd be stunned if he wasn't back because he is talented and you're under-talented at the position, but you got to call balls and strikes on this one. Marshawn Lattimore was a massive net minus for them in the playoff games against Evans and Lattimore, and Brown, but at least he also tried to fight everyone while getting beat for them.
Yeah, he may not cover, but at least you start personal feuds. I mean, to me, it's all about expectation, right? If his name was Marshawn St. Juste, we'd go, yeah, that's about right. That's what's been happening. You can't really stop anybody. You commit some penalties. Maybe you're a little bit chippy. But the billing, and part of it's not his fault, but the billing was, here's the massive improvement, here's the savior, which leads to the amount of disappointment that I think me and I know a lot of fans feel, a lot of frustration. Where you're not going to stop an A.J. Brown just one-on-one. I don't think there are many guys in the league that could do that, to be frank with you, but a better showing, especially in a game like this, where for all the marbles, again, this isn't playing Carolina when they're on their way to three wins. It's not playing Cleveland when they can't get out of their own way. It's the NFC Championship game against some pretty marquee guys. You're supposed to be the marquee guy that steps up, and it was the opposite.
Well, I would have taken St. Juste over him, working back from the result this postseason, and he makes $18 million against the cap the next 2 years. St. Juste is making $1.1 million against the cap the last 2 years, and this year, I think right around $3 million against the cap. Not to mention, you picked St. Juste with a third-round pick. You gave up a 3, a 4, and a 6 for Marshawn Lattimore. So to your point, it matters how you got him and what you gave up and what you pay a guy. They didn't have to pay him anything this year, really, but they'll make the decision, presumably, I think, to keep him around for the next couple of years. But like you brought him in because he was going to take A.J. Brown away or at least help you to shut down something. There's a bunch of faucets running when you play the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
The Barkley faucet, the Brown faucet, the Goddard faucet, the Smith faucet. They're loaded. He was supposed to just turn off the valve on one of those.
Or at least slow it to a drip.
And that was the one that sprayed the most water pretty much after that 60-yard Barkley run for the rest of the game. I thought Daniels was solid. I would even say good for the most part in the game. My only complaint, if I had one, I thought he was extremely low on a lot of throws around the line of scrimmage.
Left him look, a lot of running backs that had some running room and even a couple of receivers.
Yes.
Like left him short. It was like he was either throwing darts or kind of aiming it a little bit or didn't put the oomph on that he should have.
When I went back and rewatched the game, like you saw it right away on the initial third down to Olamide Zaccheaus, where Zaccheaus had to stop, go down on a knee, catch the ball, keep it from touching the ground. And then he barely like dove forward to get a first down right at the sticks. That was a reoccurring theme. The Eckler fumble, which I'm not blaming Jaden Daniels. Eckler fumbled. Like he's basically diving to the ground with no one around him to catch a pass to then stand up. As he's standing up, he gets the ball punched out. You know, all year long, those have been pretty easy, accurate, good throws and with ball placement. That's the beauty of Daniels is all year long that he's thrown guys kind of with momentum into space.
Incomplete one to Crowder that was short. I mean, I think there may have been one or two others as well. That was my complaint, if there was one.
But I'd say he was problem number, like, 27 on the 40 problem list. Like, I wouldn't even say he was a problem, honestly. I don't even know if I would list it as anything other than he gave them a chance. Again, they were down 14-12, and then he didn't touch the ball again until they were down 27-12. Hard to fault your quarterback for that when he's sitting, you know, on the bench in a coat in front of the heaters. If this was Zach Ertz's last game, Danny, dude went out on his shield. 16 targets, 11 catches, 100 yards. He was a man possessed. Doesn't really scary defense, can't push the ball down the field like Goddard can. Mm-hmm. He's not really a weapon in that way, but that's the ultimate Zach Ertz performance. Anytime they needed anything, they were going to 86, and he was going to make the catch.
Yeah, so moments ago, apparently, he just told reporters, I see a couple tweets from the beat folks, that he intends to play.
Good.
And that he and Daniels are just scratching the surface. So the Zach Ertz experience.
Deal. He's a free agent, yeah, by the way.
The Zach Ertz experience, 11 catches for 104, 16 targets. Maybe a couple of those are throwaways or into traffic. Do you remember the one, like, to me, this is like typifies what Ertz is and how you both need him just because of what he can do, the value. You saw it yesterday, then also his limitations. So do you remember the one pass where it was just, he couldn't quite get his second arm up there and it hit him in the hand and kind of went down to the ground? You're going, an athletic tight end, maybe Zach Ertz 3 years ago, makes that catch and is rumbling. This one can't spring, can't just burst real quick and extend a little bit. Like, think about last week when Sam Laporta goes full horizontal and catches a pass behind him. Now, I'm not saying it's not fair to compare him to Sam to Laporta, but you see the point I'm trying to make. They need to both upgrade, but also I think they still need that Zach Ertz-type presence, yeah, for those box-out-type plays, for those goal line when there's not much space and he's, you know, putting a defender on his back and boxing out. He was so valuable yesterday, but then you also saw, oh, damn, if this was 3 years ago Zach Ertz, you couldn't afford him, but you could really use that.
Yeah, maybe Sinnott could be Ertz.
That's my hope, is that
next
he grows
year, and then you go get someone who can be a downfield threat in this offense at that position who's not on the roster. But if they bring Ertz back, it kind of boxes you in then with him and Bates, who they love as a blocker, and Sinnott. You're probably not rolling with four tight ends, so it's hard to imagine them having someone like a Goddard, mm-hmm, who's more of a threat to push the ball down the field. But yeah, I have no qualms with Zach Ertz. I mean, what he did yesterday was sensational. Gave them a chance. He might have been their best player, frankly.
He was great.
But there just wasn't enough in terms of, first and foremost, protecting the football and finding ways to stop the Eagles. But let's touch the people and figure out how you guys are feeling today. Are you able to move on already to look back and say, wow, that was fun just to get there, which I'm already kind of there? Or are you in Danny's mode where you gave up 55, you got your teeth kicked in by annoying Eagles organization and their fans are chirping. So you're not ready to talk about how fun the ride was yet. 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny.
Next year's team
will be different.
Yes.
What do you hope carries over in terms of process, in terms of culture, and everything that's...
Yeah, a lot. A lot. And when you start off something, you don't tack it on at the end of the season, you know, whether that's culture or standards, or they're closely related. And this team has created that. And so how do you take it from one space and notch it up and level it up again? But there will be a lot of standards of the way we go through things, of practice and, you know, preparing of all that. So there's a lot to take away from it. There's playoff experience. There's a lot. I'm not there yet to have the reflection time.
I was in that press conference yesterday at the Link. Dan Quinn didn't really want to talk much about the journey or about the offseason ahead, understandably, after giving up 55 and being eliminated. But today he's going to have to answer a lot of those questions about some of the plans moving forward. And he's talking at 5, and we'll have that press conference live right here on Grant and Danny coming up in about 2.5 hours. Adam Peters is also going to take part in that presser and talk about some of their plans, who may come back, who may not. So we'll be diving deep into that coming up at 5 o'clock, which means our normal appointment with Jay is moved. Jay Gruden's on every Monday at 5. Today he's going to be on at 4:30 so that we can listen into that presser live. So we'll be busy with Jay Gruden 2 hours from now, and then those pressers with Peters and Quinn at about 5 o'clock on Grant and Danny. For me, as we welcome people back into G&D, Danny, I understand that they got exposed yesterday as being hotter than they were good, and that the game, losing by over 30, was indicative of them not being on the same level as the Eagles from, mm-hmm, a talent standpoint. Giving up 55 is embarrassing, but I can't really find any embarrassment. It is shameful to have allowed more points than any team ever has in a championship game. And yet I don't have any shame today.
Yeah, I'd be embarrassed to give up 55 points in week four, not in the NFC title game. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot less embarrassing than
I acknowledge it's a bad loss. Mm-hmm. It's a crappy performance. It's a dud. But I'd rather have gone on the unlikely ride to accidentally play in the game, which is basically what happened, and have to cope with how they played. So I don't really have much shame or even sadness today. There's some of that in terms of the disappointment that these opportunities are so rare and you've got to take advantage, and they didn't. But I'm on to the next, man. I mean, this was a tremendous year. They got the franchise quarterback they've been looking for. Let's rock and roll this offseason and try to get back to the postseason next year.
So my angle on it is I could fully write down my notes, all the different positive things, and you echo them. They're facts. That's correct. That's what happened. It was a wonderful ride. Mostly for me, it's because it was Philadelphia. If the Rams had won the game the week before and they lost to the Rams, I'd be bummed. It's a bummer to lose the NFC title game that close to a Super Bowl berth to make history. But it's because it's them, and it's because it's those fans and that place and that song, and they're the ones that set the record, and Saquon and all the sideline laughter and all the different shots, and Tom Brady feels like he's rooting for good execution for the for the Eagles down the stretch, and all the different weird calls, things I've never seen. Like, if you jump off sides again, we'll award them a touchdown when they're doing hard counts and stuff. Everything about it, it's so despicable, and I hate the Eagles so much. That's where my upset comes from. I'll be able to turn the page at some point this week, maybe a day or two from now, and we could talk about all the positives, which are correct, and I was there too, and I was echoing those, and I'm singing everyone's praises, but I think it's because it's them, and that's how it happened.
And yeah, we'll get to the phones. I want to hear from you guys on this at 800-636-1067 in just a moment. Just a couple of anecdotes from being at the stadium yesterday. I do want to say that I just think this organization is in such good hands overall. Watching the celebrations and the parties of the last couple of weeks on the road, you know, where celebrities are coming out of the woodwork to, you know, be in the locker room, and everyone is basically screaming and overjoyed and hugging and high-fiving, and there's happy tears, and it's just been this raucous and unbelievable environment. As you can imagine, yesterday after your season ends, and you were very confident going into the game, and then you get humbled a little bit, it was silent. I mean, it was one of the quietest, most downtrodden locker rooms I've ever been in. But every single player going into the locker room, off the field, coming through the tunnel, was greeted by Mitch Rales and Mark Hine, two of the minority owners, and got big hugs. And then they got inside the doors, and we could see Josh Harris was waiting inside the locker room, giving him a big hug. And Adam Peters would either shake their hand or do the bro hug thing or put his hand on their shoulder and kind of address each guy individually. Every one of them as they went into the locker room.
Yeah,
I just thought that was such a telling image of the way that the people at the top treat the players in this organization. And even Dan Quinn made it very clear in the press conference, because he was basically getting led, you can imagine, 7, 8, 9 different ways. Hey, talk about how amazing this year was. Talk about how, you know, you guys are going to be back here. This is the beginning, not the end. Give us the quote about how you're going to win the Super Bowl next year. You know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm overstating it.
No, but that's what everyone wants.
Exactly.
That's the quote, yeah.
And he just wouldn't play ball. And he basically said, and I loved this, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but he said, like, I'm not going to go into that locker room and tell all those guys we're going to be back here and we're going to win this thing, because not everyone will be. And it's not fair to them. Like, this locker room will never be the same.
Mm-hmm.
This brotherhood, as he calls it, like, all of these guys together are never going to be in this room. So let's acknowledge the work they put in this year. Let's tell them thank you. We're not going to talk about being back here. We're not going to talk about the next time we're going to finish, because it's not fair to the guy who's retiring or the guy whose contract is up. And yep. I kind of loved that angle too. But you could tell just the leadership. I mean, Terry McLaurin was going stall to stall when I was in the locker room, and just hugging each guy and, like, having this, like, nose-to-nose whisper, like, really powerful, clearly lifting some guys up that he felt like needed it, conversation with a bunch of dudes. And I just think they're in such a good place from a leadership standpoint and with some of the people that are the most influential in that building right now. And I thought that was on display.
Yeah, the ownership part of it especially. I didn't know about the Harris thing, which you saw. There was plenty of video, of course, of Ein and Rails shaking everybody's hand. Not in a, I'm pissed off,
how dare you kind of way. You know, like you think some of the tyrants of years past might have done that, but in a genuine appreciation type way. We know what you guys did, right? What you dudes got together starting in the springtime and did everything that was ever asked of you at every time, at every instance, to make it this far is remarkable. And that was a genuine thank you and heartfelt.
Mark's in Haymarket on Grant and Danny. How you feeling after a real tough loss, Mark?
Hey, man, I agree with you, Grant. Like, I'm kind of at peace with this, even it's only been, what, less than 24 hours. All the cliches. They've been playing with house money. It's a Cinderella story. They didn't complete the job. But, yeah, you got to be excited about the future and what they did this season. I told Screener, I ran a sporting goods store in Fairfax like 20 years ago, and I equate this to the George Mason Final Four run of 2005, 2006, mm-hmm. where, like, nobody expected them to go through, you know, Carolina, Connecticut, Michigan State, and all that. So, you know, I'm at peace with it. I love what they did. And then that's just kind of like the analogy that I came to last night.
Yeah, I love
that. Yeah.
The difference, I would say, is you knew as soon as that run ended, Mason was probably not going back to the Final Four anytime in the near future and maybe ever again. Like, that's a once-in-a-generation kind of thing. In this case, there's no reason Washington can't be a mainstay in games like yesterday's for many, many years to come. It's hard to get there every year. Nobody should expect that unless you're the Chiefs and you've been to 7 in a row and you're going to the Super Bowl for the 5th time
again
in 6 years. But there's no reason they can't be in the playoffs 7 straight years. They can't be in the NFC Championship game 3 times in 5 or 6 years or something like that. If Jaden Daniels is what it appears like he might be. 800-636-1067. How long will it take you, I'll use his phrase, to make peace with what happened yesterday? We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. We've been talking a lot about the Commanders today, as you'd expect, after yesterday's NFC Championship game. There's another team in town that is playing at a championship level, and that's the Washington Capitals. Breaking news from the ice, their terrific goaltender, Logan Thompson, has agreed on a 6-year extension with the Capitals. Thompson, 27 games played this season, just 2 losses without a point, has points in 25 of 27 contests, number 2 in the NHL with a 2.09 goals against average, .925 save percentage. He's been excellent in his first year in Washington. The 27-year-old getting a 6-year extension, $5.85 million per year for Logan Thompson with the Capitals. That breaking news into 106.7 The Fan. Elliot Friedman was on it first, but we can confirm the brand new contract for Logan Thompson with the Capitals. He's been marvelous.
Beyond marvelous. He has been sensational. It's made Charlie Lindgren, who's been fine, even pretty good, look like their backup goalie, quite frankly, over the course of this year. And again, Lindgren's been good.
Yeah, he's been above average from an NHL starting goalie standpoint, and he's definitively the second best goalie they have.
I mean, Thompson has been filthy. So he's left-handed, so he's got that right-handed catching glove. He is sensational, man. Moves the puck well. I am a Thompson guy.
Yeah, Capitals going to do some heavy lifting on this program in the weeks ahead for sure. But lines are loaded. People want to talk about how they're feeling after yesterday's NFC Championship game loss for the Commanders. The question for you guys is, have you made peace with the 32-point setback after a run that nobody saw coming? Pretty jarring way for it all to end in embarrassing fashion yesterday in Philly. Let's go to Mike in Gaithersburg. What's up, Mike?
Yes, sir. I saw it. It was a great game. That was the closest blowout I've ever seen. You know what I mean? That was the most entertaining because, like you said, it was so close for a minute of play here or there. And it just shows you what championship football is all about. The NFC is back because I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but the Super Bowl always went to the NFC East.
Thanks, buddy. So I'll disagree with you kind of categorically on how close the game was. I mean, Washington midway through the third was – being doubled up 34-15. I will agree to some extent that it always felt a little closer than it was. Like you mentioned earlier, they got to within 11 and they had the ball and it felt like if they could go score, it's anybody's game. And when you think about it, being down 11 on the road is a lot. I mean, that's not nothing. Early fourth quarter, they're down 41-23. So this idea that it was like, it was this close, I just don't subscribe to that. Having said that, what I liked about his call is, I think it was a nice litmus test and just an opportunity for us to see, here's where you need more. The Eagles, at most positions, are a lot better. My thing going into the game was, I don't think Jalen Hurts is healthy, and if he's not healthy and he can't play his A game, then Washington probably wins this football game. Well, he ended up either being or looking healthy and playing really well, and the one thing they had to do with Barkley was not allow him to score any home runs, and he hit one.
And he did that.
So if you take the home run away, and then you take some Hurts excellence away, and now you don't turn the ball over four times, you got a football game. That's a lot of ifs and buts and candies and nuts. You just aren't as good as them, and you're not supposed to be right now.
Right. I mean, quite frankly, outside of quarterback, because I'll take Jaden Daniels every day and twice on Sunday, please and thank you, there aren't many positions where I would take the Washington guy if you line him up with his Philadelphia counterpart. And that's kind of the point here. Ross Tucker said this, and he covers the Eagles, you know, in addition to his national responsibilities, and he's been making this case for months now that the Eagles have the most talented roster in the NFL, top to bottom, when you look at offensive line, defensive line, cornerbacks, how their linebackers have played in this system. Vic Fangio is as good a defensive coordinator as anybody, giving people fits all year long. So, yeah, this is that's what a disparity looks like. It can get away from you. You got to be perfect. You miss location one time, to use a pitching analogy. Every one of those guys can hit it out of the park, and they showed you that.
I had lunch with Ross in Philly yesterday. He was telling many a good Steve Spurrier story over our ham and potatoes.
That's great.
I will tell you. He's a fun guy. Let's go to Reese in Silver Spring on Grant and Danny. What's up, Reese?
I'm over yesterday, okay? We had a great year. We laid an egg. I can't believe it. The first play with Barkley, we've got our best middle linebacker really makes the tackle and he gets knocked out by his own player. Okay, let's fast forward to the NFL draft. We got $90 million in cap space in there. I think we can do pretty good there. Free agents want to come to Washington to play for us. That didn't happen with Dan Snyder. Redface, I think we're going to do pretty good there. We might have Jaden Daniels for 12 to 15 years. He might take us a couple Super Bowls, okay? We're going to be fine. Look at the combines we got next year. I want to hear Mr. Peters at 5 o'clock. I think they know what they're going to do.
Yeah, you'll hear him right here on the
Appreciate
Fan.
Appreciate you, buddy.
His press conference to end the season with Dan Quinn is at 5 about 2 hours from now, and we're going to carry it live. So make sure you're listening then. He makes a really good point about something, though. Look, they got a lot of money to spend. They're never going to spend all their money. We saw that with this group. They didn't really want to do that this offseason either, and it worked out, and they're probably feeling bold and empowered to not be overly aggressive and go spend on marquee stars or something. That's fine. They seem smart enough. They know what they're doing. They should get all the benefit of the doubt on all their decisions because they did have a high enough batting average, and this year went the way that it did. But what he said that's really interesting to me is players are going to want to come here.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. I think this is now a destination organization in a way that they have not been in a long time because they've got the cool kid at quarterback that everybody either doesn't know but loves from afar or is interacted with and loves in Jaden Daniels, because they've got a GM who's a player-friendly guy, because they've got an ownership group who is beloved by these players. They're going to put out that word all over the league. This is absolutely, for the first time in a long, long time, Jorge, a place where people are going to want to sign and come.
Yeah, it's how you get Bobby Wagner. You know what I mean? Like the veteran who could sign anywhere for not that much money gets to pick and choose, right? He's a gold jacket. The instant he's eligible, he's going in. So he's not the same guy as he was 5-6 years ago. Very few people are at this age. But the point is, you get that guy. So it's not the highest bidder. You go get Tyreek Hill or T. Higgins or whatever, the $30 million contract for some massive weapon difference maker. It's the incredible value, whatever, kind of the middle-class free agent, so to speak, that's more valuable to you maybe than to some second-division club. That guy's going to default to you now, which is emblematic of how important this culture change is.
Jay Gruden's on the show at 4:30. The Quinn and Peters presser at 5 right here on Grant and Danny. Next, what did we think of Jaden Daniels' first championship Sunday performance, and why wasn't Terry McLaurin more a factor in the football game? You're listening to The Fan.